The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to patch you in on a conference call that'll help shed some light on some college football matchups for this week. Is it time for the Tennessee clubhouse to truly become the locker room? And could the key to uncovering a college basketball winner tonight come from a Chinese carryout menu?
A Chinese carryout menu? Every day, Dave, every day you have me scratching my head. What's he talking about? But bottom line, well, it wasn't a particularly exciting Monday night football game last night, unless you had Patriots and under. We did talk a little bit about the under on this show, but there was certainly plenty of college basketball to watch yesterday. What'd you see that you want to tell us about?
Well, fortunately, it was a Monday night game. We didn't have to watch, you know, very much. We had some under for our pockets, and that was pretty comfortably under control. But here's what we did watch. And you talk about rites of passage every year on the sports calendar. The very first evening games of the Maui Invitational are must-watch television. And even if it's just UCLA and Chaminade, kind of a meaningless game, it's the first time you get McDonough, Raftery, and Billis together as an announcing crew each year. And those guys simply get after each other about as well as anyone does. Now, over the course of the season, they're always pretty good when they're together. Those first couple of games in Maui, when they've been waiting all of the offseason to get their little digs in, they come out and provide some really nice color. Good announcers, once the games begin, you can actually learn something from them, especially Bill Raftery, who would probably have number two to Al McGuire as our all-time favorite college basketball analyst. But nice to see that crew back together, and we call it the official beginning of the college basketball season. Teddy, what do you bring with us, or with you, from Monday night?
Well, for me, I'm talking about Thanksgiving. From the Vegas Video Network studio right here on the Las Vegas Strip, I'm heading straight to the airport, man. My brother, going to visit the family in Atlanta. Never been to it. I shouldn't say I've never been to Atlanta. I haven't been to Atlanta in many years. My brother just moved there this past year. So I'll be taking a trip with Isaac Cash, the youngster, and, of course, Kara, my better half. The show goes on without me tomorrow. Covers expert and Vegas professional handicapper Scott Spreitzer will be sitting in this chair tomorrow and again on Friday. It will be dark Thursday. The show goes tomorrow and Friday. We'll see how it runs without me sitting in the host chair. Should be a lot of fun. Yeah. Big applause. I hear you guys. Should be a lot of fun. Should be a great show. Please tune in and check out someone who may well be a lot better than me doing my job. Now, let's shift over. Yeah, great, guys. Appreciate that. Let's shift over to Market Watch because there's so much to talk about in the college football world. We want to get you updated on all of the conference races and standings for the coming weekend and bring up the games that are going to have conference title implications, with teams obviously doing their best, particularly in the major conferences, scrambling for those BCS bowl berth opportunities. I'm going to start in the ACC. We're going to take a look at Clemson, who is in from the Atlantic Division. Clemson will be playing for the ACC title. The Virginia Tech game this coming weekend, that's a winner-take-all. The winner of that game, straight up, obviously not ATS, but the straight up winner of that game will determine who will face Clemson in that ACC title game. Virginia Tech winner wins the Coastal Division. In the Big East, let's make this simple. Five different teams have two losses, and even UConn is still alive at 2-3. So consider the entire conference alive for the title right now. Nothing has been settled in the Big East, and they have a full slate of games the first weekend of December, so nothing likely to get decided this weekend either. in the Big Ten. Michigan State is in from the one half. Leaders, legends, I've already forgotten which one is which. I haven't, and if you can track them down, I give you all the credit. But Michigan State is in. Penn State, Wisconsin, again, winner take all right there. The Penn State, Wisconsin game will determine Michigan State's opponent in the inaugural Big Ten championship game.
Going over to Conference USA, Houston-Tulsa, winner goes to the championship game. If Southern Miss beats Memphis this week, Southern Miss is in. Southern Miss also could get in, though, if they lose to Memphis and Marshall loses to East Carolina. But if Southern Miss loses and Marshall wins, it's Marshall, of all teams, moving on to that Conference USA championship game.
Although I'll say this much. If Southern Miss loses to Memphis, they don't deserve to be in.
They don't deserve to be in. Actually, no one on their side. You can make that. In the MAC, Ohio, who we'll talk about in Money Time tonight, already clinched their spot. A little bit convoluted on the other side, though. Northern Illinois, if they beat Eastern Michigan, is in. They should, but if they lose that game, Toledo, by beating Ball State, will move on. To the Pac-10, Pac-12 now. Didn't get quite what they were looking for their first championship game. Yeah, Oregon or Stanford on one end, they'll be happy with. If Oregon beats Oregon State, they go. If Oregon loses to Oregon State, Stanford goes. Problems now in the bottom of the bracket. UCLA, if they beat Southern Cal, will move to the championship game despite a very disappointing season. If UCLA loses and Arizona State and Utah win, it's Arizona State that moves on. But if both UCLA and Arizona State lose, if Utah wins, Utah moves on. Keep in mind that UCLA plays on Saturday. Arizona State and Utah play on Friday. They'll both take the field knowing that they could be playing for a piece of that championship game.
And that's the same Utah team that started off their Pac-10 season, what, 0-4 in conference play with a chance to play for a BCS bowl opportunity. Let's keep it rolling. SEC time now. Georgia has already won the East. They'll be playing in the SEC title game. LSU wins the West if they beat Arkansas this weekend. If Arkansas beats LSU and Alabama loses to Auburn, remember the Crimson Tide, three touchdown favorites in that ballgame, but if they lose straight up to Auburn, then Arkansas will go to the SEC title game. And if LSU loses and Alabama wins, it's a three-way tie, and the team that goes to the SEC championship game will be the team that is highest in the BCS standings. So the pollsters will have an impact on who plays for that SEC title. In the WAC, Louisiana Tech wraps up the conference by beating New Mexico State. The Bulldogs own the tiebreaker over both Nevada and Utah State, so even with a loss, they're still alive. The only scenario that changes that this week is if Tech loses and Nevada wins each of the last two conference games, then the Wolfpack could win the WAC and leave Louisiana Tech as the bridesmaid, not the bride.
And now you know who needs to win, but here comes the usual caveat. They need to win these games, not necessarily win big. Every once in a while, you'll find settings like this actually works against a big favorite. Let's take a team like Louisiana Tech as a good example. They know their focus is to win the game. Again, no margin. So what do you do if you've got a comfortable lead in the second half and you have to win the game? You play conservatively. At another time, let's say back in October, you might be aggressive in the second half against New Mexico State. You might be out to extend the margin a little bit. But now the fact that you don't want to give the game back, you just want to salt it away. Some of these big favorites often come in under the spread in what looks like must-win situations because their focus is not on the margin. Keep that in mind as you do your breakdowns on those games for Friday and Saturday.
We're going to break down your emails in our next segment, but please keep those emails coming. Remember, this is your show. We're going to answer your questions. We're going to respond to your feedbacks. Keep those emails coming. Getting great questions every single day. SportsDay@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Getting new signups every day. Obviously, at Vegas Sports Day on Twitter. And, of course, you can get involved right now in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going in the posting forums. Covers.com. Just click on forums. When we come back, it's post-mortem time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Ha 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 ha! Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from TalkTales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. It's time for the postmortem. We go back into the operating room to take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
No, the Senior Bowl is not just a postseason All-Star game in Mobile, Alabama. As you know by now, it's our way of breaking down the previous meetings between two college teams to isolate the particular matchups they bring to the table. Remember that in these teams' overall power ratings carry more weight in the lines-making process than anything else. But strict power rating numbers, college football brings a whole lot more than that to the table. Each game in a series provides its own special motivation the next time the two teams meet. And there are X's and O's in these matchups that often get lost, as so much focus is paid to how the teams play against all opponents and not necessarily against each other. So when there are some unique elements in play, that means it's time to sort through the past and see if bringing us something that we can use forward, like when Arkansas and LSU square off in that huge SEC showdown on Friday. There have been plenty of reasons for the Tigers' defenders to celebrate so far this season, but will that be the case this week as they match up against a pretty darn tootin' potent Bobby Petrino offense?
This time we change our parameters a little bit for the Senior Bowl. Usually it's the last 4 years because that's the career arc of the fifth-year seniors. This year we go back to last three because that's the arc of Bobby Petrino versus Les Miles. The LSU defense, no worse than number 2 in the nation this year. You can put Alabama and LSU in a hat, both far, far better than anyone else. And that's kind of where we're accustomed to seeing this LSU defense through the years. But look at these matchups against Arkansas. Bobby Petrino brings one of the most sophisticated offensive playbooks in the nation. These head-to-heads have been interesting. Arkansas wins 2 of the 3 games straight up. First meeting, they went 31-30 as a 4-point home underdog. Second meeting, they lose in overtime at LSU 33-30, but they cover the spread, taking 3.5. Last year, they win the game at home 31-23. Note some consistency in there. At least 30 points in regulation every year against a defense that's consistently been among the nation's best. They averaged 400 yards per game over those three meetings. And it wasn't just the case of having the right game plan early, but also the fact that there were excellent adjustments made as the game went on. Arkansas scored in double figures in the fourth quarter in all three of those games. What does that tell us? A couple of things. One is, of course, Petrino has NFL-caliber talent in the skill positions to attack that LSU defense. But the big thing is he's willing to attack it. And sometimes teams that are very, very good at doing something don't get attacked at that strength very often. LSU has not had many teams try to go down the field against them. Wasn't that way through most of the careers of these defensive players. Come Friday, they're actually going to see something they don't see very often, someone actually attacking them, instead of just trying to dink and dunk. That Arkansas offense versus LSU defense, one of the best individual unit versus unit matchups of the season, and one with huge national championship implications. A lot of issues to break down in Chicago right now concerning Jay Cutler. We're not going to see Cutler probably until the playoffs if he's able to return at all because of that broken thumb. So we're going to look at this a couple of different ways in the postmortem. One is, let's examine that Bear run to this point. 5 consecutive wins and covers, but by 77.5 points over those 5 games. That's beating the spread by 15.5 per game. If you go back through NFL point spread history, you're going to be able to count on one hand the number of times a team has beaten the spread in 5 straight and by more than 14 per game in the process. The NFL is a game of pendulums. It swings back and forth. When you play real good, you tend to come back to earth a little bit because a lot of times when you're playing well, you're getting bounces. Those bounces come back. NFL betting is a game of adjustments by the odds makers. If you're going real good, they adjust the spread to try to knock you down. So now here comes this wild card element that creates the Cutler conundrum. Does the Chicago momentum get derailed? How do the odds makers now adjust? Instead of trying to move the line against the Bears, they've got difficult decisions to make. And when we got difficult decisions to make here, we go to Teddy Covers, and he makes them for us.
And this is the conundrum here for Chicago is what to do, obviously, at the quarterback position right now. We can call it the Curtis Painter versus Kerry Collins conundrum. When Indianapolis earlier this year faced an issue, what are we going to do? Are we going to promote the longtime backup who doesn't really have any experience and probably doesn't have a real future as an NFL starter? Or are we going to bring in a bigger name, a guy with starting experience, but a veteran who's not familiar with the offense? Indy brought in Kerry Collins, and we saw what happened. Complete disaster right from the get-go. They played better with Curtis Painter than they did with Kerry Collins. And in general, that's my thought process. I believe that it's better to stay with the in-house guy, even though, you know, we talk about Caleb Haney, who's the in-house guy for Chicago. He's never going to be an NFL starting quarterback for a team on opening day. He's been in the system for 4 years. And when you look at the veteran talent that's available right now in the free agent market, veteran talent that would have to come in and learn Mike Martz's offense, now, I don't think anyone can do it better than Haney. We saw Haney perform fairly well last year in a backup role. Remember the NFC Championship game against Green Bay? He actually rallied the Bears and gave them life in the fourth quarter of that contest, filling in for an injured Jay Cutler. And there's no reason to think that Haney won't be able to do that again this year, at least keep the Bears in position where they can win some games and cover some point spreads. Now, we look at Chicago's situation right now. Matt Forte, 105 carries in the last five games, also 16 receptions out of the backfield. He's facing an Oakland defense this week that allows 5.2 yards per carry. You can build a game plan around that. We look at the Bears' upcoming schedule. They follow this game at Oakland this week. They've got a home game versus Kansas City, a road trip to Denver, a home game versus Seattle. You know, they've got a puncher's chance to go 3-1 in those games just by running the ball and playing good defense and special teams. That's what the Bears tend to do. And, of course, that may impact their thought process for what they want to do regarding Caleb Haney. Here's a quote from Lovie Smith. Quote, Caleb has been around here a long time, and our football team feels comfortable with him leading us. Don't feel sorry for us or anything like that. We have a lot of things in place. We're going to miss a great player, Jay Cutler, for a period of time. But offensively, we're going to rely on our running game a bit more. We still have great defense and special teams. There is one move the Bears do still need to make. They need to find a backup quarterback for Haney, the only backup right now on the roster, Nathan Enderle from Idaho. And in watching his collegiate career, I was never sitting there going, yeah, Enderle is going to be a star at the NFL level. He's a bottom-tier backup, and the Bears likely to bring someone in to back up Haney ahead of Enderle. Enderle will remain the third stringer, a guy that has virtually no experience against big-time competition. We also need to talk about the betting marketplace here. I adjusted my power rating for the Chicago Bears 3 points following Jay Cutler's injury. I thought it was a 3-point drop-off. The betting marketplace adjusted 6 points and maybe more between now and kickoff. When the first lines came up for this game, Chicago was a 1-point road favorite before Cutler was announced as being out. Over the course of the last 24 to 48 hours, we've seen that number move as high as Oakland -5 in many locations right now. 4.5, 5, 5.5, all bouncing around if you shop around. But we'll call the prevailing number of 5 right now for the Raiders. And, you know, maybe that they're giving a little bit too much credit for Cutler's absence. Busting through those key numbers of 3 and 4 in the NFL does tend to provide some value.
When we come back, we're going to turn the cameras around, and you're going to be the stars with your emails. It's a special Tuesday. We've got Isaac in the house, and you're watching Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny, because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer the viewer emails. Man, they've been piling up. Appreciate the questions. Keep sending them in. sportsday@covers.com, that email address. Again, sportsday@covers.com. We're going to start today with a question from Lynn, right here in fabulous, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada. Lynn writes, love the show, fellas. The more options we have, game/sports choices, the better chance of finding edges. Do you recommend specializing in one or two sports, or do you recommend looking at all game/sports? Thanks again.
If you're doing your own handicapping, you're almost going to have to specialize in a couple of sports. It's so difficult to keep track with everything that's going on, especially as they overlap. Keep in mind that if the NBA had played this year, baseball now crosses into the NBA in the fall. The NBA crosses back into baseball in the spring. College basketball, up and running full scale already, right in the heart of the football season. It's awfully difficult. What we would suggest, though, because there's value to be found across the marketplace 12 months out of the year, a couple of sports you do yourself, but then find people who are good, who are specialists at particular sports, and follow them. The guys that make the most money in this industry do exactly that. They know who to follow and when to follow them. Next letter comes from Travis. Great show, guys. And, you know, it's not that we only focus on letters that say great show, guys, but it just happens they pile up that way.
Never hurts, right?
It never hurts. I saw that someone asked about how points per game equates to the over-under as it relates to the NFL. I have a spinoff on that question, applying to college football or basketball, where there are no players traded, only injuries and transfers. I'll give you an example as the question. Over-under is 65 points. Offenses score a combined 75 a game. Defenses give up a combined 55 per game. Does offense points per game or defensive points per game give a more realistic view of how the game should go?
In general, when it comes to totals, I'm not a guy that's going to focus on the averages over the course of the season. In my mind, that's not the best way to go about the problem. What I'm going to look for when I'm betting totals at the college level, I'm going to look for pacing issues. How fast is the team getting the line of scrimmage? How many plays are they running? How successful are they likely to be against the defense that they're going to face? And, of course, that works on both sides of the football. So what I'm looking for is trying to find results against similar foes as opposed to aggregate averages. The aggregate averages, yeah, they're factored into every point spread. They're factored into every total. I don't think that's the best way to go about beating the market. Now, with all of these answers, and we get asked questions every day, A lot of times I use the poker analogy of it depends, and in this instance it really does depend. But in general, defenses tend to be a little bit more consistent from week to week than offenses. Offenses have these breakout games, sometimes against weaker defensive foes, sometimes everything breaks right, even against a strong defensive foe. But there's a little bit more inconsistency on the offensive side of the football. The better defenses tend to show up every week, and the weaker defenses tend to get burned every week. In general, that's the direction I would look. Now, it's time to go inside the numbers. And Dave, I know that your Cracker Jack research staff came up with a doozy for the Tuesday edition.
Actually, they're already off to the airport. Apparently, everyone gets to take off for Thanksgiving except me. I'm going to be stuck here for the next couple of days. Everyone else gets to take off. Even the guys here in studio are getting ready to line up at Best Buy to buy some 42-inch screen that goes on sale at midnight Thursday night. Who knows if they'll be back here for Friday's show. But guys, I'll be here. And you know who else will be here this week? Tom O'Brien. When we say that, that can elicit a lot of yawns across the marketplace. And we're sort of glad that it does. One of the things we're always looking for is how coaches evolve their teams over the course of a season. Tom O'Brien has been the best late season coach in all of college football, yet you won't hear that from anywhere because there's not that sex appeal. He's never going to have teams competing for the national championship. Boston College was never going to do that. North Carolina State's never going to compete for a national championship. But O'Brien is a guy that coaches to the final whistle. From a point spread standpoint, that's where it comes into play for us. He's doing things that the markets don't necessarily see because that sex appeal isn't there. And when you get to the end of a college football season, it's the overall season power ratings that are driving the marketplace more than anything else. That means if a guy is coaching a little bit harder than his opponent, you can get outside those ratings and find something good to work with. So when we go inside the numbers for Tuesday, let's take a look at Tom O'Brien late in the season. It's going to be the last five games of the regular season and the bowl game. Since 1999, you would have gone 47-22 betting on O'Brien in every one of those games since he became the NC State head coach. 19-7 against the spread, last five of the regular season plus bowl. It shows you that while some other coaches start to back off late in the year, Tom O'Brien keeps working, keeps burning that midnight oil, and he's got his team prepared well to move forward. Still get another chance to bet O'Brien this Saturday, home favorite against Maryland, a Maryland team, Teddy, that might not be bringing all that much to the field.
I wouldn't count on the Terps showing in any way, shape, or form. They haven't shown up in about 2 months. When we come back, we're going to give you all the news and information you need to know. It's our Insider Six-Pack.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from
can't think of the name on my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
All right, guys, it's time to pop that top on the Insider six-pack. We'll crack the beer this way if you want to do it that way. We'll flip it off this way. Cans, bottles, twist-offs, however you want to drink your six-pack today, let's get it started. We're going to start in Louisville. Louisville hit the board for the first time with a very impressive 69-53 win at Butler to open up the season. And that win was even more impressive, considering the fact the Cardinals were extremely shorthanded in that ballgame. Point guard Peyton Siva missed a lot of preseason practice because of his concussion. He did not play versus Butler after spraining his ankle in practice, and he's going to be out again tonight as Louisville 23-point home favorites against Arkansas State. Forward Rakeem Buckles also not going to play at least until this weekend as he recovers from a torn ACL he suffered last February. The highly touted freshman Wayne Blackshear also going to be sitting. He's recovering from shoulder surgery. Here's a quote from Rick Pitino, quote, "We're basically starting out fresh after the first 2 weeks of practice. Guys will be way out of basketball shape, and they have to get their timing down." Now, the win at Butler shows you very clearly the way that a Rick Pitino team is going to scrap on defense. But right now, their depth and offensive rhythm may not be there to be laying points in this spread range. Again, 23-point chalk tonight.
It's never a good time to have your starting quarterback injured. And, you know, Houston lost Matt Schaub in their last game. They're going to find out tomorrow if Schaub's going to perhaps be lost for the season. He's going to go to Charlotte to meet with the specialist to see if he's going to be able to come back. Right now, let's call that iffy. But Matt Leinart has now had 2 weeks because of the bye to get in sync with the first-team offense. He's got a healthy Andre Johnson to throw the ball to. But one of the reasons why Chicago has not been able to pull the trigger on a backup for Caleb Henne yet, Houston literally had just about every available free agent quarterback in for tryouts this week. Here are the list of guys that were in Houston the last couple of days trying out. Jeff Garcia, Trent Edwards, Brody Croyle, Chase Clement, Kellen Clemens. They plan to sign one of them tomorrow, kind of a winner-take-all. But consolation prize for the losers, perhaps all four of them, could get plane tickets to Chicago. Also, a little surprise we did not expect to see in Houston this week, Daniel Manning is actually practicing again. That's far ahead of schedule from the broken tibia that he had. Not sure if he'll be back in the starting lineup this week, but just having him back in the defensive huddle in practice is a nice little boost.
Let's talk about the Vikings for a minute. Adrian Peterson will be limping to the Thanksgiving table in a walking boot, but the Vikings won't rule him out, or haven't ruled him out yet, for Sunday's game at Atlanta. And I'm a guy who always says running backs don't mean squat. Adrian Peterson, probably the exception to that rule, certainly one of the exceptions to that rule. An impact player with Minnesota because of his ability to create big plays out of the running game, something his backup, Toby Gerhardt, who's a great between-the-tackles runner, Gerhardt does not have that same big play acumen as Adrian Peterson. Now, Peterson's being diagnosed as having a left ankle sprain. The Vikings think that maybe with a couple of days' rest and treatment, he could be ready to practice on Friday. But do you force that kind of talent on the field when he's not 100%? In a season where you know your team is heading nowhere? Well, maybe not, based on this quote from Leslie Frazier, Vikings head coach. Vikings head coach for the time being, at least. Here's a quote from Frazier. "We don't want to put him at risk. You know how valuable he is to our team and our franchise. We'll monitor where he is and try to make a decision on what's best for him and what's best for our team." In addition to Gerhardt getting carries, the lion's share of carries for Minnesota, should Peterson not be able to play, expect to see a fair bit of Percy Harvin getting runs out of the backfield.
MRI on the right elbow of Tennessee quarterback Matt Hasselbeck shows no structural damage, and he'll be back at practice later this week. But is this necessarily good news for the Titans? At 5-5, they may still think they're a playoff contender. They really aren't. There are a couple of games out of the wild card, and several teams are going to be ahead of them in that race. Jake Locker played pretty well off the bench Sunday. Threw for 140 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Actually got them back into the game against Atlanta. Could this be time for Locker to actually take the offense over? Hasselbeck is not going to be the future of this franchise. They were maybe going to get one more season tops out of him. Could the injury almost be a bad thing for them? If his elbow was a little more damaged, it would force Locker into play, and it might keep them from having to make what would otherwise be an awkward decision.
Sam Bradford might be healthy, but boy, the Rams offense still is producing. It hasn't produced all year. Terrible red zone execution, bottom of the league in terms of points per game. All kinds of problems with the Rams attack. And, you know, they finished Sunday's loss against Seattle with three offensive linemen on the field that weren't on the roster when training camp opened. That includes the center, Tony Raggi, the right tackle, Adam Goldberg, and the left tackle, Kevin Hughes. Yeah, that's a center in both tackles, which helps explain why St. Louis has been unable to protect their quarterback, run the football, do any of the things that winning football teams do so far this season. Now, Hughes, an undrafted rookie out of Southeast Louisiana, he was signed off the practice squad on Saturday to add depth behind Mark Lavoie, who was already replacing the injured starter Roger Stafford. Yeah, big issues there. Lavoie went down with an injury in the second quarter that forced Hughes onto the field against Chris Clemens. Chris Clemens had three sacks in the ballgame, and Seattle ate up St. Louis on the offensive front.
Of course, that helped pave the way for Seattle to win that game. And in last week's show, in an Insider Six-Pack, we talked about the problems of the Seattle offensive line. That entire new right side, Brino Giacomini, at right tackle, Paul McQuiston at right guard. So you might look at that box score and think, well, they ran for 126 yards. They won the game. Those guys were okay. I want to dig a little bit deeper. They got 3.2 yards per rush on Sunday. The Rams coming into that game were allowing 5.1. That's almost 2 full yards less than what the Rams have been giving up. And that offensive line was whistled for 7 penalties in that game. Not a good performance. Let's watch that right side of their offensive line going forward.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this information to work for you. It's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys. It's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need to know in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Maui. Always good to talk about Hawaii at this time of year. Right now, Duke, about 6.5, 7-point favorite. We'll call it 7 over Michigan tonight. And the Blue Devils and Wolverines played a heck of a game last March on a neutral site. They get a rematch this evening.
Fascinating breakdown. And it wasn't really a neutral site in March because it was an NCAA tournament game played in Charlotte. One of those pod setups that they have for the first two rounds. And it was very close to a Duke home court advantage. Yet Michigan was the aggressor in that game and attacked Duke very, very well. 12.5-point underdog, they only lost 73-71, largely because John Boeheim's offense was able to consistently break down the Duke defense. They shot 50.9% from the field, almost twice as many assists as turnovers, 13 assists, only 7 turnovers. They lost the game because they got beat on the boards. We mentioned that offense breaking down the Duke defense because this is probably the weakest Duke defense in terms of guarding people man-to-man they've had in several years. If you saw how good Michigan executed against Memphis yesterday, we might be able to see that Michigan offense break this Duke team down once again, possibly smelling an upset.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the breaking down a defense. Boeheim was unbelievable. I give him all the credit because, of course, Michigan trying to replace Stu Douglas, who was a real big-time talent at the point guard position. They bring plenty of returning talent back, but that's an offense where you want the steady hand of the point. There were big issues with that coming into the season. It doesn't look like there are any issues right now. They put on an absolute clinic of how to play disciplined basketball in the win over Memphis yesterday. They're going to have to do the same thing today in order to beat Duke, but there's one really good sign for the Wolverines when it comes to that matchup. Again, last year against Duke, out-rebounded by 13 boards in the two-point loss to the Blue Devils. That's the only reason they lost the game. Well, against a bigger, faster, more athletic, and more physical Memphis team yesterday, the Wolverines, they showed some toughness on the boards. 36-23 rebound edge for the Michigan side of the equation.
Let's go to Athens, Ohio. They call this matchup the Battle of the Bricks, but tonight, could this game possibly lay one? We're seeing Ohio U right now, about a 9-point favorite, total of 53. A good chance of rain during the day in Athens, but remember, this is a field turf field, so the field will be in excellent condition and kind of a warm evening for late November. Temperature going to be in the upper 50s, but even though it's a rivalry, does either team really bring anything tonight?
Well, that's the big question here, Dave, because there's no question. We're talking about an Ohio Bobcat squad that, as we talked about at the top of the show in Market Watch, Ohio's already clinched their trip to the MAC title game. This is a meaningless regular season finale. One of those week 17 games in the NFL where the team's already clinched their spots. All Ohio U has to do is show up, and they'll be playing again for a title next week. However, Miami O, they put everything into last week's game against Western Michigan, came up short by 3 points at home. 31 seniors went out losers on senior day for Don Treadwell's squad, and now they're not going bowling. They're not playing for anything here. This, a meaningless regular season finale for the Redhawks as well. So two teams, both with motivational questions. Certainly, when we look at the Miami O side, maybe the motivational questions kind of stand out. Here's what Don Treadwell said, quote, "A loss is a loss, but it certainly hurts more when it's your senior's last home game. It's going to resonate with us for a little bit." So we'll have to see if Miami O can bounce back from that. But then again, the point spread's a great equalizer. If Ohio's flat, this is an Ohio team, one touchdown in 7 red zone appearances last week, not exactly executing well on the offensive side of the football. If Ohio doesn't show, guess what? They're the ones that have to win the game by 9. That could give Miami O an edge.
If we want to trust anything at all, though, let's look at Frank Solich a little bit, because at times where we think the team could be flat, we want to see if it's a veteran coach or not. Teddy brought up those red zone failures last week. That's pretty important, because Solich knows he's got a big challenge on deck next week. He's the type of veteran who might say, you know what, this is a prime dress rehearsal. If we're going to win next week, we better correct our mistakes. We better play well tonight. We much more trust a veteran coach in a flat spot than we would a much younger coach.
Let's go to the Prudential Center in Newark, where Seton Hall, in the range of about a 9-point favorite tonight against the Yale Bulldogs. Even 9.5 now popping up in many locations. Now, Seton Hall's playing their 4th game in 6 days. They're coming back from a Charleston trip that ended on Sunday night, so less than 48 hours of turnaround time. And boy, they look like a tired team down the stretch at Northwestern. They had Northwestern on the ropes in that ballgame. Let it get away from them late because of some of those depth issues, playing with only a 6-man rotation.
If you've been following the show the past week, you're going to see we bring two different elements that we like a lot into play tonight. First, we can start with an anti-Seton Hall. We talk about teams having that stopover after a tournament or the first game after a tournament appearance. In fact, we even wanted to tease this game at the start by saying, could they have trouble when the music stops and they're no longer dancing the Charleston? But when we ran this by the crew early, said, you really are old.
Yeah, that's brutal. Charleston.
So we didn't use that. But here's the problem. Now, let's get into why this happens. Charleston may not be a major trip going back to New Jersey, but it's 3 games in 4 days. But remember, these kids are students. And a lot of them you scoff, yeah, they don't go to class, blah, blah. Here's why these tournaments matter so much. So many of these guys don't go to class that much. They're on edge at the end of the semester. A lot of college basketball players must pass their fall courses to be eligible to play in the spring. That's why things are tough after a trip, because you do have to come back and start hitting the books. So it's a good time to play against Seton Hall. And a recurring theme that we have about these teams that have the preseason trips, Yale took one. Yale had a trip to China back in May. They played 3 games. They were there for a total of 10 days. Gave the team a chance to build a lot of chemistry. Those teams are further along early in the season than so many of their opponents. Now keep in mind how good Yale was too last year. They were invited to play in the CBI tournament. They turned it down because they had the China trip coming up. So this is also a team that can play a little bit.
Yeah, they sure can. You talk about some of the key cogs for Yale. How about the center, Greg Mangiano? He was a preseason Ivy League Player of the Year. He was on Team USA in the World University Games. This is a guy with some big-time experience and some big-time talent. Similarly, the forward, Jeremiah Kreisberg, played for the Israeli under-20 team in the European Championships this past year. They know that a game against a Big East opponent matters if they want to be in the postseason come March. So this is a game that Yale probably has circled excuse me, on their schedule, and that might set us up for perhaps a play of the day today, Dave.
Let's put it all together for you. The best situations that you have in sports are where you get a play against team and a play on team that comes in the same setting. We think we've got both tonight. Not only is Seton Hall distracted because of that trip of coming back from Charleston, but this is a team that's only 6 or 7 deep. They don't have a lot of depth. They're not going to get many easy wins this year. They're not going to extend margins. And let's look at this Yale team. Not only knowing that they could play into the postseason in a minor tournament come March, but maybe taking a shot at the NCAA tournament. They've got several key road games on their calendar that they will play much more seriously than in the past. So many times Ivy League teams are flat early. They wait for Ivy play. Yale doesn't have to be that way. They've been to China, hence the carryout menu aspect from the top of the show. Let's put Yale in the hunt all the way in this game, maybe for the outright upset, but certainly as the play of the day to stay within that point spread.
That's Yale, plus the 9.5 for the play of the day for Tuesday. And that's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. For Mr. Malinsky, for the younger Mr. Savransky, say hi, Isaac, say hi. And for myself, thank you so much for watching. Have a great Thanksgiving. Scott and Dave will be back again doing the show tomorrow. And I'll be back again post-Thanksgiving. Have a great day, enjoy the games, and good luck.